welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Swindlehurst. Coming up today, we'll be looking back at the home draw with Fleetwood and ahead to games against Gillingham and Crewe, as well as answering some of your questions. I'm joined by Jordan Warland.
Hey, Jack. Hey, everyone.
And Tom Walker.
Good afternoon.
Nice to see you, lads. Let's get into it. Fleetwood game from Saturday, a 2-2 draw, eventful game. Jordan, does it feel like 2 points dropped, or do you feel it's a fair result?
Yeah, I think ultimately I probably would say it was 2 points dropped. On a personal note, it was just lovely being back in the ground because of friends in quote marks there. I've having weddings and stag do's. I've missed the last two home games and the epic away win at Portsmouth last week. So I'm going to start this pod by saying, if you're listening and you're thinking of planning a wedding for August or September, don't do it. Don't be that friend. But yeah, back to the game, back to the club. I'm really torn on yesterday because on one hand, it's such a positive sort of statement and you know, kind of recognition of where we are as a club, how well we've stepped up, how well, you know, we're doing, how good the start's been, that we can stand here and say, oh, we're disappointed to get a point, you know, disappointed to get a draw in League One. So yeah, such a great reflection of how well the team are doing, and credit to Bonner and the lads. But on the other hand, yeah, I am disappointed that we did just get a point yesterday. I feel like we had enough of the ball and enough of possession and control of the game that we should have, you know, we really should have been, you know, got like a third or got ourselves out of sight. I think there's a lot to take heart from. Credit to the lads for getting back in the game and coming from behind. I think there was a fair few of us in the crowd that when we conceded so early, a little part of us thought, oh, is this going to be another Lincoln? But no, fair play for the team for getting back in the game and getting back in the game quite quickly, even though the goal wasn't immediate. But yeah, it's just a little bit disappointing, isn't it? Because I felt that Fleetwood didn't offer a lot second half. And then out of nowhere, they scored this absolute pearl of a goal. And, you know, watching back on the highlights, I don't think there's more the defence could have done. And Mitov certainly couldn't have got close to it. So, I don't know. I guess my conclusion from yesterday was it was a really positive performance. We reacted really well to that early setback. You know, we're scoring goals. We're keeping ourselves in games, even if we go behind. We did really well to sort of come back, like I said. And I think we edged the game. And I know Bonner said after the match, we can't turn our nose up at a draw. But a little part of me does feel like it was points dropped. But Tom made a really good point before we started recording about Fleetwood, you know, in the first five and last five. So I'll let Tom finish that one.
Yeah, it was, you know, we were obviously talking just sort of before recording, and you know, I thought it was a bit of a, you know, it was a good watch, the game. You know, it was an entertaining afternoon of football, basically. But yeah, I felt we sort of, you know, we were the better team for the most part. You know, after a pretty shaky start, you know, did really well to grow back into the game. Brilliant goal from Adam May, who I think seems to have been told to, you know, try your luck a little bit more. I seem to recall he was trying shots from that sort of distance in pre-season once or twice. He tried it at Portsmouth on one occasion and forced a good save out of the keeper. Then obviously yesterday managed to place a shot in pretty much the only part, you know, where it would have gone in, just sort of between the goalkeeper's fingertips and the post, basically. And then the second goal, you know, another really well-worked move and a great run from Iredale and a good finish from Tracy, who I'm glad to see that he's adding goals to his game. I think, you know, having lost Mullin, which we've obviously talked about time and time again, you know, Bonner's obviously said it's important goals are coming from sort of other areas of the pitch. I think the sort of wide players, that's basically on them a little bit more. You know, you sort of want your wingers maybe getting between 5 and 10 goals a season. If you can do that, then you obviously give yourselves a good chance of staying up. But I thought for sort of the most part we controlled the game, but despite conceding sort of relatively late on, I actually came away, you know, obviously disappointed not to have won, but I just felt that if that game had gone on yesterday for, you know, sort of another 5 or 10 minutes, then I think it looked like Fleetwood were more likely to sort of go on and get a winner. So, yeah, I think I understand what Bonner's saying, that, you know, at this level, you know, you don't turn your nose up at a point. I know football doesn't really work like this, but I guess if you'd offered me 4 points from Fleetwood and Portsmouth, I would have been pretty happy with that. And that's obviously exactly what we've got. It probably puts a little bit more pressure on the Gillingham game, which is obviously not ideal, but, you know, it's obviously another very winnable game. But I understand what Bonner's saying there, but I'd be surprised if, you know, on reflection, he's woke up this morning quite frustrated not to have got all 3 points, really.
You mentioned 4 points, Tom. It's kind of as if it's more than that, isn't it? Because there's 4 points from two games without Houlihan.
Yeah, and I think Bonner was asked about that in his post-match, and he mentioned that he had a scan, and well, we obviously don't expect him to play on Tuesdays, but he's definitely ruled out anyway, you know, regardless of the sort of management of his minutes. But I think there are a couple of points, a couple of sort of talking points coming away from the game that I sort of wanted to bring in. The first of those is obviously finding a way to play without Houlihan, because he's clearly, in terms of ability, the best player that we've got at the club. And when he's missing, that's obviously such a blow to us. I think May came in and was in a slightly more advanced role than he was at Portsmouth. Not, you know, obviously not playing exactly the same role as Houlihan does, but slotted into that position, I think, really well. Caused some problems, obviously got the goal. The other two sort of tactical points I thought came out of yesterday was, firstly, we need to find a way of playing and creating chances against the weaker sides in this division. You know, we're not a podcast that are always talking about the data. You know, we never suggest that we do that. You know, it's obviously not what we aim to be. But if you look at the XG from yesterday, I think it's about 1.1 for us. We're not creating many, you know, high quality chances. And that's fine when you play against Portsmouth. That's fine when you play against the Boltons and the Lincolns, of this, because clearly it's about limiting them. And we did limit Fleetwood quite well. Their XG was actually less than one. So, you know, albeit a really poorly defended set piece and a sort of wonder goal aside, there wasn't really too much for Mitov to do. But the onus is going to be on us in these games. And that's obviously a bit weird for us, having stepped up to a level that we've not played at for so long. But we do need to find a way of playing, you know, sort of against these teams. And then the second one that I think is a bit more hypothetical, but we need to find a way of, you know, reducing the reliance on Ironside, I think, a little bit, because he works so hard, and, you know, it's becoming almost a bit of a sort of repeated cliche that he takes the hits for, you know, everyone else and the rest of the team. But unfortunately, if he takes the hits for the rest of the team all season, he's going to get injured at some point. And if that does happen, I am concerned with not necessarily the quality of the options that we've got, because I think Smith's a really good player. I think Nibs has got his own, you know, sort of his own qualities, but it's more about finding a way to play without that sort of focal point, and that could prove quite difficult. Clearly, it's a bit more hypothetical than obviously the first one, but I do think they're both sort of talking points that Bonner will maybe have to have a bit of a think about and just sort of tweak things, particularly in those sorts of games.
Well, looking at Mark Bonner and the squad in general, we've had a couple of questions from our dedicated listeners, and Omalu, who's regularly in contact. On the Adam May issue, I mean, not with it being an issue, he's performing really well. What do you think will happen to Adam May when Wes comes back? Will he fit in? Will he still play?
Well, he's done himself no harm. I think his versatility has been really impressive in the last couple of games, probably more than anything. Obviously played a bit more of a sort of withdrawn role away at Portsmouth, as you'd obviously expect, and did very well, you know, sort of doing the simple things of the game. And then, you know, against Fleetwood, it was obviously a bit more emphasis on obviously the sort of attacking side of his play, which he did really well. I think it's always going to be as simple as if obviously Wes is fit, then he starts. You know, you'd be foolish not to. But yeah, May's obviously doing himself no harm when Wes does come back, of keeping his place maybe at the expense of somebody else.
Yeah, I think Adam May might be in for a frustrating season, which is, you know, nothing a knock against him. But before I start talking about Adam May, I think I need to sort of start with an apology to Adam himself, because first half yesterday as he collected the ball after some brilliant work from Digby in the build-up, and he opened himself up and it was obvious that he was going to hit it. I rather loudly said out loud, "Don't shoot." And of course it went in. So terrific. Great goal. Well done, Adam. And apologies for ever doubting you with that one. I think it's going to be a frustrating season for him. Like Tom says, if Wes is fit, you've got to play Wes. And longer term, I got the feeling that Lancaster is here to be the Wes replacement. So I think the key battle within the squad, as it were, is who's going to partner Digby. I always imagined that the season would start with Digby and O'Neill playing together as we found our way in the league and tried to be solid to start with. And as the season developed, we'd maybe see some rotation in sort of next to Digby. And I thought, you know, May would need to, you know, fight quite hard with Weir, because how long before Brighton get annoyed that Weir's not playing? So I thought that would happen, but what I didn't see happening is just how well Liam O'Neill has adapted and stepped up to League One. So between the three of them, it's going to be a really frustrating season, because I don't think, you know, two of them are going to get the game time that they perhaps thought or expected to get. Having said that, you know, we do need a way of playing without Wes, and it seems that sort of playing, you know, those three does seem to be working quite well. I think, you know, like I think Julian said it on last week's pod, I think O'Neill and May suit playing in a midfield three. I think we maybe don't have the players to play two in the middle there and play 4-4-2. So yeah, I think if we continue to sort of play that sort of more compact three, I think they will get more time. But I don't know. I don't know how the rest of the season is going to pan out for May, because I think that position is the one that we've rather fortunate that we've got options and we've got competition for. So it might take an injury or a suspension for one of them, May, Weir or Lancaster, to get in.
I'm glad you mentioned the suspensions, George, because it was something that friend of the pod and usual contributor Matt Ramsey mentioned on Twitter. I think it was just after Digby had been booked. There are a few players in that area of the pitch who are likely to pick up the sort of fifth yellow card. Digby obviously is on four. I think O'Neill and May might be on three each. It might not be May, it might be somebody else. But obviously that's one thing that's going to obviously impact the selection of the team. But I think just sort of in like a broader sense, I think it's really interesting to note that whoever, you know, does pick up that fifth yellow card first is going to be the first player to be suspended since Mark Bonner's come in. That's remarkable.
It's incredible, isn't it? Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes to show I suppose the discipline with which he's obviously sort of instilled in the team. I think probably going back to maybe last season's preview, Jordan, you mentioned that he seems like a guy who doesn't suffer fools, basically. He's not going to have dickheads around the squad, basically.
Swindle wouldn't get in, yeah.
And you know, look, clearly getting suspended is obviously part and parcel of football, particularly if you play in that sort of area of the pitch. But the fact that we, you know, went all of last season without having a red card or a suspension was, you know, ridiculous, really. But it is going to happen at times. It's something that we're obviously going to have to deal with. And you know, I guess when one door shuts, another one opens, and it'd be good to see you can step in. I'm surprised we haven't seen as much of Weir as I guess we all thought we would. You know, obviously, brilliant pedigree. You know, plays, you know, sort of England youth teams. You know, rated highly at Brighton, it seems. They might be starting to get a little bit frustrated, but you know, I'm sure we'll get his chance when those suspensions start coming in.
Just back on the Adam May point, I think it's worth giving some kudos to Fleetwood. Like, their midfield is pretty strong. So I think May was going to play and O'Neill was going to play in that, because we needed to sort of match them and limit them there. And then I wonder if, like Tom was saying earlier, when we start playing teams which perhaps might not be as strong in that area, or teams where we need to be more proactive and more on the front foot taking the game to them, then we might see someone like a Weir or May sitting in that deeper position to maybe try and move us further up the pitch.
Yeah, it's probably worth speaking about Fleetwood a little bit as well, I guess. You know, we obviously focus on ourselves so much and, you know, understandably so. You know, we're probably more interested in Cambridge's affairs than we are Fleetwood's, of course. But I know this is a game that we would all have targeted points from, right? And we obviously got the draw, which is, you know, not a disaster, but, you know, obviously not the result that we were sort of hoping for. But if you look at their recent results and you sort of look at the, you know, the players that they've got sort of threaded throughout that team, they're actually a pretty decent outfit and they've got a decent manager there in Grayson as well. So we might look back on that and see that as a, you know, a pretty decent point, you know, coming into the season. I don't think that they're necessarily going to be pushing the playoffs too much, but they're not necessarily going to be the sort of relegation fodder that it might have seen at the start of the season. You know, Tom Clark's a player who's played at Championship level before. You know, we obviously know Max Clark got a very, very good spell abroad. Rossiter obviously came through and sort of played for Liverpool, I think, on a few occasions. Callum Camps has been doing it at this level for a number of years. And obviously Joe Garner, who came off the bench, I thought, you know, caused a lot of problems. He was absolutely pinned on Okudina for that, for sort of, I think, half hour that he played. And also the second half when he came on at half time. And Okudina obviously had to do quite well to sort of cope with him, which he did fairly well, I thought. But yeah, I think it's obviously worth just mentioning that, you know, we can talk about there being 2 points dropped, but they're actually not a bad side, to be honest.
Yeah, just on that, I saw a stat from my friend Nappers, who was on the pod last week, which I'm sure everyone enjoyed listening to him from the COD Army or whatever it's called. He made a point yesterday that under Simon Grayson, so 31 games, Fleetwood have picked up 14 points from losing positions. So that just goes to back up what Tom was saying. Like, they're not, you know, they're not perhaps the pushover that perhaps we maybe were expecting. Whilst there was loads of positives from yesterday, and I think we should talk about people like Charlotte Tracy and Jack Ardale, who had really good games, I would throw in one downer point, and that is just that we've maybe become accustomed to this, but we've just been so good at holding on to points from winning positions. I don't know the stats, but it's a pretty good record that we've got under Bonner, that once we get ahead, we see it out. So it's a little bit disappointing that we didn't get the 3 points yesterday. But, you know, we go again. We've got 3 games coming up, which are kind of a similar mould to Fleetwood. So hopefully we can learn from this.
So just before we look ahead to what is actually a very big week, there was a question that came in from John O'Roop, and it kind of relates to what you're just saying, Jordan, kind of a little bit. Does Bonner's lack of willingness to make substitutions cost us points? I certainly think it did yesterday. I suppose the proviso here is that what you said before we started recording, this is not a new thing.
Yeah, Tom and I both said that. It's not a new thing, is it? That's one of the things, even last year when we were top of the league and winning promotion, we had doubts or questions over, you know, his timing of his substitutions and was he doing it too late and were they having the impact that you would hope? I feel uneasy sort of criticising Bonner, especially tactically, because he's normally pretty, pretty spot on. The reason we started so well and, you know, if we'd won yesterday, I think we would have been sixth in the table. If we'd played Doncaster and got a point or 3 points, we would have been in the playoffs. A lot of that is down to Bonner, the way he works, the way he scouts teams, the way he sets us up. So I feel a little uneasy criticising him about how he's running the team. But I just wonder if I think he maybe just has the confidence in players that if they're doing well, he doesn't want to hook them. So like Adam May was a great example yesterday. He was having a really, really good game. But it did feel like he was the sub to make, you know, throw a second striker on because Ironside all game was doing really well. I think he won, saw a stat on the message board, he won 14 aerial battles, which was more than the Fleetwood backline combined. But there wasn't someone close enough to get that. And I just think, you know, if Smither came on maybe on the hour or 70 minutes, perhaps we could have offered something a little bit quicker and got that second goal. But I think the reason he's not doing the subs is because he knows the team so well and he's got that confidence in them. So to answer the question, like, does Bonner's subs cost us points? I would probably say Bonner's selection and tactical nous is winning us more points than it's losing.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. And you know, clearly it's not a new thing, but I'd also argue that it's not necessarily a bad thing either. I'd probably say Bonner's biggest strength is his ability to impact games without actually making any subs. You know, how many times last season did we go in at the break? You know, not sure about how it was going to go, and then suddenly you come out at half time and it looks like a different team. I think the one that I was a little confused that we didn't see yesterday was Lancaster, just because I think probably more than anything, it's out of my own sort of intrigue. He's one that I'm really excited to see sort of what he's got and what he can sort of bring to the team. You know, we've seen him in sort of flashes here and there, you know, whether it's in the Pizza Cup or in the League Cup. But what we have seen has been pretty impressive so far. Part of that will be maybe reluctance to make loads of subs, and that's obviously, you know, Bonner's managerial style. I think we can safely say by now. But part of it might be managing minutes as well. I think he played virtually the entire game on Tuesday. He's coming back from quite a serious injury, which obviously he signed with. And it might just be the case that you don't really want to be sort of rushing these guys back too quickly. That's not to say that there's, you know, it would have been beyond him to have sort of 10 minutes at the end, for example. But, you know, that sort of might be part of it. But I do think the point that Jordan raised there about, you know, Bonner's confidence in the team that he picks, I think that probably explains it better than anything, to be honest, because I feel like he goes into these games with a very clear idea of what the best way is to sort of combat the opposition that we have in front of us. And, you know, he's probably just very confident in obviously his own managerial ability, which obviously he should be after what he's sort of achieved so far. And he's not just going to completely change his plans because it's, you know, had sort of dodgy 5 minutes. So, I can see people's frustrations, but it's not something, you know, I wouldn't be looking for Mark Bonner to change his sort of approach to games, at this stage, because it's fair to say it's gone pretty well so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Freddie asked about Lancaster and whether we think he's going to get into the starting 11, you know, when he's back from this. Jordan, just a final point before we preview the Gillingham game. Do you think Lancaster's going to become a mainstay in the team, or do you think he's going to have to kind of work quite hard to get out of the fringes?
I think it's worth pointing out that Lancaster's dad replied on Twitter saying yesterday he is going to get into the starting lineup. So that's your answer, right? His dad says it's happening, so it must be happening, which I really enjoyed that. I love seeing family members sort of enjoy the good times. I think Iredale's parents are quite vocal on the message board, so it's really great to see, especially after Iredale was so brilliant yesterday. That assist in the second was superb. I was in the South Haven, had a great view of the moment the penny dropped. He went, you know what, I'm going for this. And I also got a great view of Tracy's movement, which really, you know, meant that he was there for that finish. I do think Lancaster will have a big career at Cambridge United. I think he is here to be the next Houlihan, which is going to be a big ask. Whether that happens this season or next season, I think he might need to bide his time and be patient. I do think we'll start to see him play more games. Like Tom said, he's coming back from injury, so it's managing minutes. It's also managing who we're up, you know, who we're up against. You know, if we're going away to say Portsmouth, are you going to play an out and out number 10, or are you going to play someone who can switch between sort of the midfield three and get further forward like May can? So I think he'll need to buy his time, but I do think he'll get into the team. I also think one of the reasons he's not got into the team so far, and this was a surprise for me, looking, you know, when I think back to pre-season, is the quality that we've got on the right-hand side in Shiloh Tracy. Pre-season, I thought the left-hand side, Brophy and the relationship with Houlihan, that will be where our goals and our assists come from. And so far, Tracy on the right-hand side has been terrific. I think he's perhaps played more games than maybe he thought he might, because I think he probably knew that him and Lancaster were going to compete for that position. But he's playing like someone who wants to keep their position, and he's playing like someone that every time he's playing and every time he's getting minutes, he's getting more and more confident. Second half yesterday, I stood in the South Haven and I had such a great view of his performance because obviously he was on the right hand side. He was growing in confidence. He can trap the ball really well. He can carry the ball really well. Pace was terrific. His movement for the goal was superb. He's chipping in with goals like we said earlier in the pod, which we need to do. His defensive work is getting better, although I do think that will still be a thing as the season goes on. He's getting closer to Ironside, which is what we need from those three players. I'm really, really enjoying Shiloh Tracy and his input for that move, which Adam May, in my opinion, should have scored just before the Fleetwood goal was terrific. That was such a lovely move from him, winning the ball unexpectedly from a Fleetwood mistake to get into the byline, getting it back to Brigadier. The ball in was good, perhaps maybe a little bit above Adam May, and that's why it's not gone in. But that's a real League One kind of like penny drop moment, isn't it? If you don't take a chance like that, which admittedly it's not the sitter that perhaps people thought it was, but if you don't take a chance like that, you could get punished, and we literally got punished 60 seconds later. So a long-winded answer there, but yeah, I do think we'll see more of Lancaster, but there's a reason we haven't so far.
Yeah, it's a very thorough answer, and it's probably the right kind of headache for Mark Bonner to have, this squad depth and quality. Right, looking forward now, it's non-stop for Cambridge. Next up is Gillingham at the Abbey on Tuesday, and Jordan caught up with Matt from Gills in the Blood blog.
Right, news fans, I'm here with Matt, who is part of Gills in the Blood blog, but also one of the co-hosts of the Third Tier pod as well. Big Gillingham fan, and we're going to have a little chat about everything Gillingham ahead of our game on Tuesday night. So, Matt, thanks for joining us. 9 games into the season now. How has the start been for Gillingham?
Patchy, inconsistent, frustrating. Injuries keep holding us back. I've said so many times that it feels like it's been one step forward and two step back this season. We picked up decent points. We picked a decent point up at the weekend. Gone to Oxford where we barely score, let alone get anything. So that's a decent point at face value, isolation. But we've only won one game in the league. And they say that you start finding out where teams are potentially going to finish after 10, 12 games. And we're getting very close to that marker now. And we're right down the bottom. We're just outside the relegation zone, unfortunately. We need players back. Every time we get one or two back, another two pull up. I've said it a million times. We had COVID in pre-season. We lost some players for 20 days where they had to isolate because of being pinged, and then they got tested positive, so they lost another 10 days. That's held us back. They then picked up niggly muscular injuries. Like I said, to sum up, it seems to have been one step forward and two steps back. There's been good performance in parts, but I don't think we've put together a 90 minutes yet. But at the same time, there's only been probably one 90 minutes where we've been awful for the entirety, and that was Wimbledon away. And that was the biggest smash and grab you'll ever imagine. A deflected own goal in the 98th minute with 10 men. Take the point and run as fast as you can. It's been annoying because we know what Steve Evans' teams do. They're hard to beat. They're in your face. We like to get the ball up the pitch early. We're not going to make no bones about that. We're not the prettiest team on the eye. We're not on MK Dons or anyone like that. But we're effective when we've got everyone available. And it's just been a case of at the moment of not having everyone available on a regular enough basis. I think we've had four right backs, three left backs this season. We had to field a bench with kids for the first 5-6 games of the season, and then, like I say, you get a couple back and another two go down with problems, and it's just frustrating because there's no consistency in the selection, no consistency in the personnel, and you struggle to build up relationships and rapport on the pitch, and then that makes it harder. Of course it does. But I mean, you look at the results. We've drawn to Lincoln. They got to the playoff final last season. We've drawn with Charlton, are a good side. We've drawn with Oxford Saturday, are a decent side, got to the playoffs last season. But you've got to start winning games. It seems to be our favourite result this campaign so far is 1-1. I think we've drawn 5 games and literally every single one of them has been by that scoreline. It's just a case of trying to put consistent performances together for longer. And then I'm sure the wins will start to come. We've only lost 3 games in all competitions in 12, but the flip side is we've only won twice in 90 minutes. We won a penalty shootout and lost a penalty shootout, but...
How do you think you're sort of tracking against your expectations? So you sort of said you're sort of around the sort of the relegation zone at the moment. What were you and the rest of Gillingham fans sort of expecting from this season? Do you think you were sort of mid-table or pushing a bit higher, or were your expectations lower than that and you thought that you might be around the sort of bottom 6 or 8 clubs?
I said at the start of, the season, I did a pre-season video on my channel, and I had us down as 10th. We finished 10th the two seasons that Steve Evans has been in charge. And the one thing with Steve Evans and Paul Rayner is regardless of whether you like them as individuals, as management, as a duo, is they'll make you hard to beat. You'll be in people's faces, and you'll win more football matches than you lose. And we certainly won't be in any type of relegation battle. I've said that all along, and we haven't been. But like I've said, we're getting towards that magical 10, 12 game mark, and we're still, you know, some way from being in the top half. So my 10th place prediction looks mighty optimistic at the moment. Unfortunately, it's a very strong league. There's going to be a lot of teams that are going to end up disappointed come May. You could have 5, 6 really big sides that are going to miss out on the playoffs. And that's the strength of this division at the moment. And you're probably finding that out as well. You've not been in this division since, I think, 2002. So you've probably walked into the strongest third tier in the best part of two decades. So it is tough. And but what we do as Gillingham is we'll go and take points off teams that we probably shouldn't. But at the same time, it's League One for a reason. And that's why these players across this division are not playing in the Premier League. They chuck in the odd awful performance and we'll probably lose games that we should be expected to win. But I'm still confident if we can get everyone fit sooner rather than later, we'll still be fine. We'll be in the top half and we'll have no danger in terms of a relegation battle. I just don't see that happening.
Going to have to ask about Steve Evans because he's well known to Cambridge fans. We had run-ins with him as when he was in charge of Crawley and Boston, and obviously he was in charge of our rivals Peterborough for a while. What's the kind of what's his reputation like with Gillingham fans at the moment? Are people happy with him in charge, or are people starting to question him given that your start's not been that great?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fans, myself included, that didn't want him when it was the news was broken that he was going to be appointed. I said I thought there were younger managers with sort of more to give at the time. But I've been proven wrong, and I'm happy to say that. You know, there's no point sitting here and pretending. He's made us a better football club. He's made us win more football matches. He's made us lose less. We're shopping in a different market, and that's no disrespect to the two previous managers, Steve Lovell and Aidy Pennock. We were shopping in League Two, National League, non-league, whereas now we've been able to go and talk to teams like Chelsea. We've got Jamie coming in on loan, the keeper, and we had two from Arsenal last season. Excuse me, we had two from Southampton. I mean, no disrespect to them two before Steve Evans, but we wouldn't have even entertained that idea. He's got so many contacts from his time at Leeds and all his other previous clubs that it gives you a chance. And even talking to him, let alone even managing to persuade him to come into the football club. So I've been one round. I've not seen anything that's too untoward in terms of what he does on the touchline. He gets too many yellow cards. I think he's the first to admit that. He got sent off at Crawley, and that's one of his former clubs. So I didn't like him when he was at Peterborough. I used to shout at him. But that's the tribalism of football. But no, he certainly, in terms of his 2 years at Gills, he's made us a better football team. He's made me want to go on a Saturday and a Tuesday more often than not, which wasn't the case so much in the two reigns before that, particularly under Aidy Pennock. And I'd much rather have him being passionate and screaming at the officials and opposition players on the touchline than a manager that stood there with his hands sunk in his pockets or his arms folded, offering absolutely nothing at all. So for me, it's been a breath of fresh air and it's improved us no end.
So looking ahead to Tuesday night, Cambridge fans listening to this that might not know the Gillingham squad that well. I know, obviously, you've mentioned injuries, so you perhaps might not have all your key players available. But who do you think that should be fit on Tuesday night could be sort of a match winner for Gillingham? Who should Cambridge fans be keeping an eye on?
In terms of attacking players, because that's generally what us fans look at. We don't look at centre halves or fullbacks or keepers because they're not as sexy as flying wingers or people that are going to score your goals. For Dane Oliver was our top scorer last season. He got 20 in all competitions. He's got 4 in 10, I think, this season. So he started off pretty consistently. 3 in the league. He'll be a threat if we get service into him. Carl Dempsey, the captain, just seems to get better and better every week. I've said ever since we signed him in the summer of 2020 that I can't believe that Joey Barton let him leave Fleetwood on a free transfer. But, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure and all that. And he's come to us and he's been absolutely superb. Mustafa Carriol's been really good since coming in. He was on trial in the summer, but unfortunately he's missed the last 3, so I'm not sure whether he's going to be available. But as a wide man, he's probably as close as we're going to get to replacing Jordan Graham, who left in the summer. The centre-backs has probably been the part where we've been the most consistent in terms of selection, Jack Tucker and Max Amar. But unfortunately, Tucker's going to be suspended because he picked up his 5th caution at the weekend against Oxford. So I'd think Reece Bennett are probably coming there if we've got full-backs fit. We've missed Ryan Jackson. He's he pulled a hamstring, I think, at the start of the season. Then he came back. Then he done it again at Shrewsbury, and he's missed the last four. So whether he's fit, I'm not sure. So it could be patched up there. But in terms of attacking options, we are starting to see more people available. John Akindi's back from injury. I know he wasn't entirely great at Oxford at the weekend, according to social media. I think there was a run-in with some fans, which I don't like to see. Voice opinion by all means, but there's no need to abuse. If that is what's happened, I wasn't there, so I can't say one way or the other. But at least it's given us people on the bench. We're able to turn to people and say, right, you can come on and be a game changer. You can come on and see a game out, which we didn't have, essentially, for the first 6 weeks of the season. It was a decent 11, but take Shrewsbury, for instance. We had probably six on the pitch at full-time that shouldn't have been out there. But Dane Oliver twisted his ankle 4 days previously and played 90 minutes, shouldn't have even been in the squad. And that's what COVID and injuries have done to us. But touch wood, we're getting a few back. We've probably only got two or three now that are missing. But it's always hard when you run with a small squad, which is generally what clubs like Gillingham and, dare I say it, Cambridge do as well, because budgets are tight, especially after a pandemic when we've had no income for the best part of 18 months, and that makes it tricky. But the minimum we'll get from any Gillingham side that's put out on the park for Steve Evans is it'll work hard, it'll be difficult to beat, difficult to break down. And then if we can get the ball into the right areas, hopefully we can get our better players on the ball and cause you some problems.
One last question then, Matt. Can I ask you for a prediction for the game? It sounds like you're a draw specialist. Can you see it being anything other than a draw?
If you ask my head, then I'd probably say no. I'd probably go 1-1. And again, it would represent a decent point on the road. They always say if you win your own games and you pick up stuff on your travels, then you're going to be there or thereabouts and you're certainly going to be in no trouble. But we need to start turning these single-point hauls into three-point hauls. You had a decent enough start to the season. You picked up some good results. You got a goal scorer in Joe Ironside. Defensively, you've been pretty sound. So it's going to be another tough evening. Let's make no bones about that. This isn't Gillingham are going to turn up to a team that's come up from League Two and we're going to roll them over. And if we do that, we'll get beat and we'll get beat comfortably. But head says 1-1. Heart says, surely law of averages says we might win a game sooner rather than later. So I'm going to say 2-1 with my heart to Gilles. But it'll be a close game. It'll be tough. It'll be hard work. It'll probably be ugly at times. And we'll have to do the horrible side of the game and earn the right to play, however that is. But yeah, head says 1-1. Heart says 2-1 to Gillingham.
Matt, thank you so much. All the best for the season, mate.
No problem. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Interesting to hear from Matt there. And certainly this week, and certainly this game, looks like a one that Cambridge United really should be going for all 3 points in. Gillingham haven't got a win in the last five games. And yeah, they look like they're kind of there for the taking. I know that's that's going to jinx us now. But Jordan, we should be going for all 3 points, shouldn't we?
Yeah, you'd like to think so, especially being at home. I think they've got, like Matt was saying, issues with injuries. Perhaps one of their centre-backs might be out. How do they cover that? I don't think it's going to be as easy as saying, oh, they've not won in the last five and we're at home, therefore it's going to be a win. I think Tuesday's going to be a tough one, actually. We know Steve Evans, right? We know what his teams are all about. Matt was sort of talking about it in the interview there. They're going to be in your face. It's going to be a battle, and it's going to be hard to get a result. It's such a relief that the reporting on Digby having five cards, which went around on Saturday, turned out to be wrong, because that's the kind of game you're going to need Paul Digby in there in the middle. It's going to be a tough one on Tuesday. I only have two predictions, and prediction one is it's going to be really hard work, and prediction two is it's not going to be pretty. So I'd love to say 3 points, but I think it could be a draw as well.
How are you feeling about Tuesday, Tom?
Exactly the same as any time we come up against a Steve Evans team, I think. He's just a bloke that has a knack of getting good results against us. And it couldn't be a worse bloke to have that sort of knack. He is an absolute bell end. I don't have too much more to offer than that, to be honest. Obviously, the one to watch out for, I guess, is going to be Dane Oliver. He's the guy there. I don't know too much else about him, to be honest, but... it's never a nice prospect. Like, even when you're back at the Abbey under the lights Tuesday night, should be a reasonable crowd in there, but I still just think it's gonna be a grind, isn't it?
I think the big thing as well, Tom, we didn't touch on this earlier from Saturday, but obviously we didn't have Lloyd Jones and they've got he's to play for Lincoln. Is it Akindi up front?
Yeah,
he's back from injury. He could really test two inexperienced younger centre backs. So I think the word post match was that if Jones didn't play Saturday, he should be fine for Tuesday. But if he's not in the starting lineup, it could be a really tough night for Jobs and for Masterton at the back.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many times last season did we talk about the sort of wily old striker? McKinley's obviously a little bit different to some of the ones that he came up against last season, but obviously poses a very different challenge in terms of his sort of physicality and obviously what he brings to the game. But yeah, it's going to be a difficult evening, but I mean, I suppose similar to the Fleetwood game, really, we should have confidence that we can impact the game. You know, obviously as much as those guys that we've just touched on can for Gillingham. I'll be interested to see how Bonner does approach it. You know, we obviously talked in the first part about, you know, that we maybe need to find a way of creating chances against some of these teams on a more regular basis. I've got a sneaky feeling Lancaster might start. Just feels at the right sort of moment to bring in something a little bit different. And I really hope that is the case, because like I said before, and you know, on a few occasions, he's just a player I'm really interested by, and I think on the limited evidence that we've got so far, seems to be a really good pickup. So hopefully, we see a bit more of him.
Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see. And like you say, squad depth and rotation is definitely good for these Tuesday night games. Then following on Saturday, Cambridge United have a trip up to Crewe, and Jordan caught up with Stuart from the Railway Men pod.
I am on the phone with Stuart, who's part of the Railway Men podcast, talking about all things Crewe, who we visit on Saturday. Stuart, thanks very much for joining us. I think it's fair to say it's been a bit of a turbulent time for Crewe at the moment. Talk us through what's been going on, both on and off the field.
Hi, Jordan. How long have you got if you want me to go through the whole of the off-field situation? Really, really quickly then, because I'm aware this is the Cambridge podcast, you don't want to hear all about it. But we had two players who we signed in the summer who retired. One retired before he'd played a professional game for us. He played a couple of friendlies, decided he couldn't do it anymore. One at least gave it three games and then he retired. So that was a good start to the recruitment process. We obviously had to sign players like Tommy Holborn and Sean McDonald, the two players I'm talking about, to replace our outgoing academy players who have left. We've now got Harry Pickering, Perry NG, Ryan Wintle all playing at the league above. We'll get onto Owen Dale in a second because he's another one who's playing in a league above, but his story is slightly different. On the eve of the season, Charlton put a bid in for Charlie Kirk, who was our left winger, academy player's contract was running down at the end of this year. He left. We've got Tommy Lowry, another contract dispute, another academy player. He wants to sign. He wants to play. The manager won't play him until he signs a contract. His agent's telling him not to sign a contract, so he is not playing. He's our best creative ball-playing midfielder. A waste of time and talent right there. We've then got Owen Dale, who is another academy player, won all the awards last season, player of the season, players player of the season, et cetera, et cetera. He saw what his mates had left to go and earn in the championship because, you know, all his mates come through the academy, been together for 10, 12 years together. They've all gone. He probably wasn't ready. I think most Crewe fans will say that. He thought he was and he deserved to go to somewhere else, stormed out of training, told the manager to F off. And basically went on strike. He got a loan move to Blackpool just as the deadline day was happening. He's gone there for 6 months on loan to Blackpool. It's been interesting. I'm hope that was quick enough to sort of go through everything. It's definitely given us a lot to talk about on the pod. Dave Artell, the manager, had to do his summer recruitment, and then he basically had to do his summer recruitment again with what was left. We are still kind of finding our feet and finding out what our team is, finding the formation that the players that we've got can play, and the players are still getting to know each other. It's been a difficult start to the season, probably the most difficult that I can remember, certainly in the last few years.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly tough. I was going to say, like, how has that impacted things on the pitch? Because it doesn't look, I mean, you've already touched on it, you know, you sort of finding your feet and finding your best formation. But in terms of results and form, it's not looking too great. But has there been any any glimpses in the last couple of games which maybe make you think you might be turning corner, and was there any sort of light at the end of the tunnel, do you think?
Well, I'll take you through the season sort of snapshots. We started off at home game against Cheltenham. We said on the pod, no disrespect to Cheltenham, but that is a game you've got to be targeting for a win. We ended up drawing, and then that was the only game we didn't lose in the first five or six games of the season. We got these loan players in. We went to Shrewsbury, who are around the bottom where we are at the minute. We got a draw. First time we didn't lose since the opening day, and it felt like we'd maybe turned a corner. I remember saying on the podcast that if we'd have played Shrewsbury in a couple of weeks' time, when the players had sort of got to know each other a bit, the style of play, I was confident we'd have won that game. We then had a couple of weeks off because of the internationals, played Burton, beat them. You know, that was a bit of a shock. First league game that we'd won all season. People are starting to say, yeah, okay, that's it. You know, we've had our tricky spell. We've brought in some really good players, because I think we have brought in some really good players. And then we played Morecambe on Tuesday night and got stuffed 3-1 by a team that hadn't won all month or for a month. And then it's all doom and gloom again. We went to Rotherham on Saturday, got absolutely dominated. I mean, the stats for that game will tell you. Anyone looking at the stats will see how one way it was. We got a 91st minute penalty. Chris Porter, who's now 37, lots of fans don't really think that he should be in the team anymore, but he's never missed a penalty for Crewe. So he steps up, scores, we get the point away at Rotherham. A good point, you know, Rotherham a good team. It's a difficult place to go, but the performance wasn't very good, if I'm honest. I started off reasonably optimistic with this season in terms of I thought we would be fine. I thought we'd be about where Cambridge are now at the end of the season. We're 9 games in. If we don't get relegated this season, then I'm happy that's a successful season from where we are now, if I'm honest with you.
Let's touch on sort of players then, because obviously, you know, it's been ins and outs, but you said there's a couple there that have shown some promise. For Cambridge fans that don't know the Crewe lineup, who should we keep an eye on next Saturday? Like, who do you think could be a match winner for Crewe?
So I'll take you through. Well, you know, most people that are listening to this, you know, lower league football fans tend to be fairly educated in other lower league clubs. So most people, I imagine, will know that Crewe's way is the academy way. We will bring players up, we will play them in the first team, even if they're not quite ready, and they'll make mistakes, and then we'll improve them, and then they'll go off and play a bit higher up. So academy-wise at the minute, Luke Offord, centre-back, is one of the rising stars. We've also got Josh Lundstrom in the middle. Luke Murphy, who was originally an academy player, went off, played for Leeds, Burton, Bolton. He's now back. He's club captain. The goalie will probably be Will Jaskalainen, Jussi Jaskalainen's son. But it's a bit thin on the ground in terms of academy players at the minute. We're in the middle of a spell between the old ones who were first team, got us promoted from League Two. You know, the promotion team from League Two was the spine, was an academy team. They've gone, and the next crop aren't quite ready. So we've got a lot of loan players in. Janiel Bennett, we've got on loan from Spurs. He has been superb since coming left forward, scored against Burton. The other goal was an own goal, basically, from his cross. He missed the game at Rotherham through illness. He looks very good. Mika Mandron, I'm a big fan of. He's a striker. He came to Crewe with a reputation of being quite good, but not scoring enough goals. Probably still true, but I just love his hold-up play. I love how he gets about the pitch. Wins flick-ons, holds the ball up, gets other people into play. Exactly the sort of thing you want a striker to do when you're playing 4-3-3. And then other players, we've got a guy, again, a loan signing, Scott Robertson. He's on loan from Celtic. I'll be honest with you, I've no idea what he's doing in League One. He should probably, looking at Celtic's results this season, he should probably be in their first team helping them out. He's a good player. He will be playing in the SPL for Celtic next season. I'm certain of that. That's it, really. We've got a couple of other loan signings. Kane Ramsey from Southampton. We signed Scott Cashcott from Wickham on deadline day. It's a bit of a mixed bag at the minute. We're still not quite sure how these players are because they're all fairly new to us.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stuart. I'm going to ask you one last question. obviously you play Tuesday night against Plymouth, which will be a tough one. But then you've got us on Saturday. How do you think the Saturday game will go? What prediction have you got?
Well, you know, if we want to stay up, Cambridge at home is a result, is a fixture that you look at and think, well, we should be aiming to win this game. At the minute, I'm not very confident of that. But if I'm not going to give up in September and decide that we're going to get relegated in September, then I have to be confident and say we'll win. We don't score many goals. We don't keep many clean sheets. So let's say 2-1, Crewe win.
So Crewe are another team who are down there. And certainly, I mean, I don't just want to sound like a broken record about Cambridge needing to go for all 3 points. But after a pretty poor start to the season, Tom, do you think this is a chance for Cambridge to get one of those important away wins?
Yeah, it should be. And I guess similar points that we discussed about against Fleetwood and sort of against Gillingham sort of apply to this game as well. They've had a pretty torrid time of it, to be fair, Crewe. They had a really difficult summer. I think they lost a few of the sort of younger guys with high potential who have been performing so well for them. I think we're part of the sort of promotion winning team a couple of years ago and obviously played a big part in them sort of establishing themselves at this level. They've obviously gone on to sort of bigger and probably better things. And then weirdly, they had a couple of players who just retired, but not like 39, 40-year-old guys. Like, we're talking about sort of players in their mid-20s. I think one of them went off to be like a financial advisor, for example, and they just jacked it in. So it's clearly been a bit of a rocky road this season so far, and they've obviously really struggled to basically get to grips with the league after that. We've got to kind of smell blood a little bit here and you know, we should back ourselves that we can go there and get a win. Our record against Crewe is generally speaking quite good over the last few years when we played them. And I'd like to think that we can go there confident that we can get at least something from the game.
I think their expectations now are similar to what most of us were thinking, what, 8 games ago as Cambridge fans, like just stay up at by any means. I think us being the away team might hand us the advantage. The fact that we can go and do what we did so well against other teams like Portsmouth and just sort of take our time and kind of put the emphasis on someone else to try and break us down. And I think we've got the players to really hurt them, quite an inexperienced team. Having said that, they've got a couple of good lads on loan. Their central midfielder is on loan from Celtic. Stuart in the interview was really complimentary on him. And then I think they've got someone on loan from Spurs. His name's Bennett, who plays up top. So we know, you know, thanks to Okadina and Charlotte Tracy, how good the Spurs youth setup is. So they won't be a pushover. And I just wonder, you know, they've got a long trip on Tuesday night away to Plymouth. Perhaps that might play into our hands as well, might disrupt their training and so forth. So I'm hopeful and slightly confident ahead of Saturday. I think it's the kind of game that we should be targeting and win. And I think the confidence that we should have in the squad based off our opening 8 games means that we should look at teams like Gillingham and teams like Crewe and have no fear, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It starts a bumper October, welcoming some of the league's big boys to the Abbey, and it's certainly going to be an interesting month. But listen, it's been great to have to be back on the pod. Jordan Wallen, thank you.
Thanks, everyone. See you Tuesday night.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Yeah, good to be back. We'll see you again next week. 6 points, Witcher.